And Ken, thank you so much for the kind words on behalf of everybody on the ground, and also extend our appreciation for the thought partnering with different board members. Just as a check, can everybody see the shared screen here?
Yes.
Okie dokie, thank you. So as Elias said, today it's a catch-up to sort of validate the discussions that we had at the previous board meeting. There was a proposed change in the timeline. We were then asked to go back and assess the timelines and, you know, and present any, identify and discuss and present any challenges as we move into the implementation phase, be it for the November reopening and then, you know, looking at the December 7th upcoming date, understanding that there is another board, you know, one or maybe two board meetings prior to that December 7th date. To the board members that had received the preliminary package, you know, I just would like to advise you that we have sort of restructured the deck. A lot of the slides that have to do with the detailed presentation of schedules per building and per grade have been moved down to the appendix so that we will be focusing on some of the discussions around the back to, you know, return to work policy and accommodations, provide you some other operating related updates, you know, and then engage in a conversation, a short conversation on some of the shifts around the academic work and proposals for reopening, primarily in phase two, the heavy lift, as we prepare to have staff back on, you know, all staff returning by November 30th and then reopening on December 7th. And then, you know, we're going to finalize with a discussion around health and wellness, reopening and decision-making process. We're going to have an example of applying the metrics, you know, using the data that we have today. And, you know, we've also added some slides. Brittany added some slides to not only look at the state data, but also bring it back to a context of Newcastle County. So there's some added information to be shared with you that is a little more pertinent to our current reality on the ground. What we're looking in terms of the board decisions tonight is, you know, sort of an approval around the HR policy regarding return to work requirements, a discussion, and, you know, making you aware of it, and then empowering the administration to move ahead. As revisiting phase one and phase two reopening plans and making sure that we can keep moving on the implementation plan, of course, always subject to, at a given point in time prior, especially to phase two reopening, that we will revisit with the board the health and wellness metrics, the gatekeeping metrics that have been presented by the health and wellness subcommittee at the previous board meetings. So just very quickly, I think the major driver right now in terms of the proposed acceleration was being able to bring from phase three in January into phase two December, the planning and execution of a 50% of a K-8 in-person instruction. And so that was one of the go-dos to test that and see whether we could proceed with that implementation. At the same time, you know, we were asked to... There's some background noise. So we were also asked to possibly start assessing and thinking through about what needs to be in place to possibly consider the eventual acceleration of phase four into, you know, which was slated to be occurring in February, which is really the opening of 50% of the 912 of the high school into January. And so, but that was just putting out there to consider it. That discussion per se is going to be left for a subsequent board meeting. So today it's really focusing on moving ahead with phase one next week, and then phase two in December. So before Jeff jumps in to look at the HR return to work policy, you know, or procedures and accommodations, I just wanted to quickly cover what are the current health and wellness measures that we have been working on implementing and we plan to implement as we ramp up the reopening. Class sizes have been reduced so that we can respect the 6-foot social distancing requirements. And we will have some photographs of what these might look like at, at the different schools. You know, we will be having two crews of, two custodial crews, one a day crew that will be working at keeping all the high traffic and high use areas during the day disinfected and cleansed. And then a second crew, to be defined if it's, we're looking at subcontracting the second crew to come in the evenings and complement that work. The plan is during the days to have restroom cleaning on a rotation of no more than 2 hours. It is likely that they will happen more often than a 2-hour rotation. We are halfway through the installation of the bipolar ionization air purification system, and we will be sending out tomorrow or thereafter a quick communication to everybody of what that entails. Here it really focuses on reducing the load of mold, bacteria, viruses, allergens that are in a closed air system like the one we have. Buildings 20 and 23, the installation has been completed. We're working on building 21. And then later, by the end of the week, we will have building 22 also completed. We are exploring additional PPEs, upon request, special face shields, desk shields, masks, hand sanitizers, baskets where kids can store their belongings in classroom beside the chairs or tables they're going to sit at. And this is an evolving discussion. We're trying to be as responsive as possible to create as safe as an environment, be it for the children and the students as they're coming back, but also for the staff that is going to be back to teach the students. Jeff, would you like to jump in here?
Sure. Thanks, Ricardo, and good evening to the board and members of the OCS community. Just to reiterate, the items that Ricardo just listed are, some of the main sort of resources and accommodations that we're making inside the building, and then Brittany's going to hop into later what safety and precautions we're taking for what's going on societally at that point. As we move towards reopening, we had the surveys come in, and the Human Resources Department reached out to each individual that responded from a staffing perspective. And, staff are essential workers for the delivery of the school's educational mission. And as such, they're being required to return to work in person. And that's why it's so important that the financial investments that are taking place, both from the bipolar ionization process and for the additional, you know, custodial needs for the evening staff shift. And, you know, as that was how we're trying to make Odyssey a safe place to return. Districts and charter schools are entertaining staff requests for accommodations in varying capacities. Districts that have a larger bandwidth of staff are able to have virtual only classrooms in some capacities, where we're seeing certain charter schools that don't have those types of bandwidth not being able to provide as robust accommodations because of the undue financial hardship that would come from what those accommodations may look like. From our perspective in human resources, based on the conversations we had following the surveys, we had 19 requests for medically based accommodations to date, and we've received the required medical documentation for 14 employees. So the OCS administration and HR have an interactive process with employees to determine possible accommodation options that may include. You know, I think in any capacity, an accommodation that, you know, leverages our current employees in a way that is cost neutral for the organization is the preference. And that's what we will explore every option we can to get to that end goal. And with that, reasonable accommodations are determined on a case-by-case basis. Not every accommodation is going to look the same. And, you know, something that we're going to have to keep in mind during the analysis from an administrative level is that there could be some undue hardship on the school that we'll have to consider when making those decisions. So at this point, our recommendation to the board is to require all remaining staff to return to school by 11:30 to provide the current asset-based and PPE health and wellness resources, which some of that, like Ricardo mentioned, is already in progress, and to minimize the undue hardship to the organization where we can. You know, we're aware of the where our current budget stood when we had it approved preliminarily a couple months back. And so any way that we can make these accommodations in a way that minimizes that undue hardship is going to be the preference.
I think it would also be appropriate to quickly state that of the staff surveys, am I correct in stating that we received feedback from all staff?
Yes.
There were some pending responses as of the last board meeting, and since then we have collected all staff surveys with regards to their potential needs for accommodation. Is that?
That's correct, and there's still some ongoing conversations with staff members as we're able to connect with them at different times and that type of thing. But in some capacity, we have heard from all instructional staff members.
Are there any questions that we might address at this point in time?
Hello.
Okay, so we'll just proceed at this point in time.
Hello.
Somebody, I think there are a few questions. I think someone has a question.
Yeah,
are
not
you guys able to hear us?
No, we're not taking questions from the folks here. We're going to do that after the briefing during the public comment section.
Yeah, asking the board if they have any questions with regards to this segment of the presentation.
But you only want us to speak after everything is done? There may be so much content. Why can't we comment as we go along?
That's what the board is here to do. If you have any questions or comments as part of the public section of the board, we do open it up for the
I'm not public. I'm a parent.
Sure. But this is a meeting to discuss board business, and we're working through that. It's a typical process.
But your board members representing me and the interest of my child. You are presenting so much content that you want me to wait till the end before I can ask a question?
That's correct.
That's not fair.
That's the way, that's the protocol and the way it's run.
We may need to go back to Frank Street, to the Department of Education. That's not fair. You're going to give me so much volume to respond to at the end. We may need to go back to DOE. This is not fair.
So this is the way all public meetings are run.
I know, but okay. But I think, you have.
No, thank you. Let's proceed with the meeting, and we'll take public comments. If you have any comments, we'll put something in the chat so that you can text or ask questions as we move when we're at the end.
Thank you. So just very quickly, with a few updates, you know, we talked a little bit about the bipolar ionization units and the installation. With regards to the custodial staff, we had received some questions from the board about potentially subcontracting the second shift instead of hiring employees as part of the staff, given the hopefully very temporary nature of the need of a second shift. You know, as we had mentioned before, the normal modus operandi is that our custodial staff comes in during a normal school year in the late afternoon, early evening to do the cleaning of the facilities at the end of the school day, preparing it for the next school day. With the COVID environment, what we are looking to do is to bring our custodial staff to operate during the day and then potentially subcontract a third party vendor on a temporary basis to take care of the evening custodial services. We've gone out and obtained some quotes, and there is a significant difference in price between having the staff as part of our staff versus having them contracted through a third-party janitorial service companies. We still have some additional quotes to come in, but this is going to be a discussion that we will then have when we finalize the contracting of or the hiring of the evening staff. This has to we do have to start ramping this up. During the month of November, according to John, there is some training that is going to be required even when we bring in a custodial, should we bring in a custodial company. So there's going to be a little bit of lead time prior to December 7th in the implementation of this strategy. Food service is working very closely in ramping up the preparation for the rendering of services to our students. The intent is not only to offer both cold and hot meals to our students. So the prepping there is a little more complex. They continue to work in servicing academia, and the food service staff continues to prep meals for distribution 3 times a week. To our families that have requested the support, since the beginning of the pandemic. The transportation department this week started rendering services to Red Clay. I believe we have 8 or 9 buses running the routes for Red Clay. And, here, unlike in the classrooms, the protocols, the state protocols being adopted across the board is that bus ridership is based on 3 feet of social distancing versus 6 feet of social distancing. And this is driven because, as we had spoken before, that at 6 feet social distancing, the demand on additional buses that would be required once we reopen in December would be significant. And therefore, at this point in time, we are going to be operating buses and, with seats, seating arrangements at 3 feet social distancing. On the IT front, good news is that we have received 600 tablets, Chromebook tablets, for the K-2. They have been received. They are being prepared for distribution. So next week, according to Dino, we will be starting the distribution of the K-2 tablets. The devices that will be returned by these students once they get the new technology will be then redistributed for use at the other grade levels. Unfortunately, at this point in time, the other deliveries have been pushed back into first quarter, but we're hopeful with this partial delivery that we might be getting some better news, even though the information we have received from the manufacturer is that deliveries have been pushed back. We're looking to implement the SchoolPass wellness screening tool, very robust tool, with the intent of the wellness checks being done on an app and being done at home. Once again, we had very robust discussions about, you know, the wellness screenings and whether they should be done here at school or at the bus stops. And, you know, it would create a significant burden on the schedule and the time needed to conduct these screenings here at school. And so this is part of the partnership that we are asking to implement with our families as we ramp up the reopening of our schools. And with that, I will pass the baton to Jackie and Juliana.
Hello, thank you, Ricardo. We're gonna take the next section to outline the changes that have occurred based on the board's request from the last meeting, moving the reopening of the hybrid schedule K-8 into phase 2. We will also preview phase 3 and phase 4 as well, even though we know our focus is not on those last phases tonight.
So this slide outlines the given timeline based on the following slides. Pending the approval of phase 2, administration will be providing all families with a reopening commitment survey for phase 2 instruction with the anticipated return date of December 7th. Please note that we will be sending an additional commitment to high school families with the proposed phase 4 high school plan in January.
You can go on. Thank you, Ricardo. In phase 1, we've identified the activities that are already happening, as well as bringing our complex needs students back on campus. So the tentative date for bringing this cohort on campus is Monday, November 9th.
Phase 1 has 3 large components: on-campus activities that are inclusive of activities already occurring, as well as bringing our complex needs students back on campus, needs-based academic small groups, as well as live therapies for in-person students.
Each student's schedule would be personalized to meet their individual needs. However, all students will be able to participate with their peers in synchronous instruction and receive additional direct instruction in person from their teacher during the appropriate times. During the asynchronous time in the afternoon, students will be able to participate in small group supports from the instructional staff on campus.
Here we have a picture of a room that is set up for phase 1 learning. You will notice the appropriate spacing between the desks, as well as the limited amount of items around the room and on the wall. This is to demonstrate what the classroom will look like based on the health and wellness protocols.
Now, as we begin to outline the new version of phase 2, we want to identify the changes from the last meeting. Per the request of the board, phase 2 is now inclusive of bringing K-8 students back in a hybrid format, and students in 9 to 12 back on campus with a virtual cafe model. We learned of some new challenges that we've outlined solutions for, along with the recommendation we believe is the most appropriate at this time for Odyssey. Regardless of the option, phase 2 will begin in-person live instruction for students in kindergarten through 8th grade. Transportation would be available to all students that are coming on campus and at the conclusion of the school day. This would be 3:55 p.m. for students in the lower school and intermediate school, and 2:30 p.m. for our middle school and high school students. Breakfast and lunch will be provided to all students that are on campus during this phase. All students grades K through 12 will remain virtual on Wednesdays and follow our Flex Wednesday schedule, where they can complete any asynchronous work for the week. This will allow for all buildings to have a day without students for further cleaning. Teachers can also continue to hold synchronous or live small group instruction as needed via Zoom, as well as their office hours. Students would be required to complete temperature and health checks at home before arriving on campus. Students will need to enter all buildings at a socially distanced manner, and will be staggering student entrances into all buildings.
Thank you. Our current reality, if you could stay, I think we're on slide 17 for us. Our current reality is that the Chromebooks for grades 3, 4, 6, and 7 will not be delivered until January to March 2021. Kindergarten through second grade have arrived, and they will have devices by the anticipated start of phase two. With that being said, we have outlined two options that we can move forward with understanding this challenge. We are recommending option one. In this recommendation, we will continue to utilize the half-day instructional model K through 5 was presented previously. For the lower school, this means that the day will run from 8:25 a.m. to 12 o'clock p.m. for lower school students and 8:15 a.m. to 11:50 a.m. for intermediate school students. At the conclusion of the direct instruction time, students will have the ability to either be picked up by an adult or continue to remain at Odyssey for a virtual cafe afternoon. With this option, there will be no buses leaving campus half-day. For the students that elect to remain at OCS, they will have time to eat lunch, go out for recess, have scheduled asynchronous instructional time to complete homework and specials assignments, as well as additional socially distanced activities that the virtual cafe monitors will facilitate.
So the positives of this model allow for students to remain with their homeroom teacher. Students will receive instruction from their teachers daily, be it in person or synchronously via Zoom in the afternoon. We'll be able to rotate the groups of students to limit the number of students exposed to one another in the afternoon with the different virtual cafe activities that were discussed. Buses will be able to run at the end of the typical school day, so families will not need to receive students half day if they choose to participate in the virtual cafe. There will be two car line dismissals over the course of the day for students who do not wish to remain at OCS for the virtual cafe. We anticipate that some students will opt for this, which will decrease the number of students exiting the building at one given time. Challenges that accompany this model is staffing the virtual cafe. Knowing that teachers will be Zooming with online students in the afternoon, we are already identifying staff members that would be able to monitor and facilitate these virtual cafes. Once the commitment from families and exact numbers have been finalized, we will be able to additionally finalize the schedule. The second challenge is the students will need their own devices in grades 3 and 4 to participate in asynchronous learning. Some families have either personal or OCS Chromebooks and laptops, while some families are utilizing desktop computers. IT has the capability of providing up to 100 additional desktop devices for these students to have a device to work on at Odyssey during the virtual cafe. Again, we believe that despite these challenges, we should continue to utilize this model and we'll have the greatest success for students in K-5.
Next slide, please. Slide 19.
I think that's the right one.
Okay. The second option to address the technology challenge, which is something we do not recommend, is to have the K through 5 cohort come back for a full day of instruction utilizing a dual modality model. And again, we do not recommend this. The instructional day would run the full school day, 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. and allow for two cohorts of students. Teachers would be teaching to the in-person students at the same time as teaching to the students at home. The positive of this option, again, is that students would be able to hear from their teacher all 4 days for an extended period of time, knowing that it would be for a full school day. There are a multitude of challenges that are occurring with this option. First and foremost, this option is not developmentally appropriate for this grade band to stay engaged on their own throughout the entire course of the day. With a dual modality, students would need to understand that the teacher will not be able to respond to either cohort's needs immediately and will need to demonstrate patience as a teacher works through supporting them. The amount of screen time would increase significantly for all students, and there would still be two cohorts streaming classes throughout the day. Additionally, we will need to accommodate for more students that would be staying to receive and eat lunch as well, which would congest the dismissal by having all students in a given cohort in the building all day. Again, as a result, we believe that this is not the most appropriate option for our K through 5 students to return, but we did want to provide you with the rationale as to why we are still supporting an instructional morning with a virtual cafe in the afternoon.
So on this slide, you can see the snapshot of what a K to five teacher's weekly schedule would look like. The difference between the buildings is the day begins 10 minutes sooner for the intermediate school to accommodate for the additional time for bus and car line. Cohort A meets in person on Monday and Tuesday morning, and cohort B meets in person on Thursday and Friday morning. Cohort C is our group of students that will elect to remain virtual. So on Monday and Tuesday, the teacher will see cohort A in person at Odyssey during the morning section. And that afternoon, the teacher will then teach the same lessons virtually to cohorts B and C together on Zoom. So then again, on Thursday and Friday, cohorts A and B will switch. The teacher will see cohort B in person at Odyssey during the morning. And in the afternoon, the teacher will teach the same lessons virtually to cohorts A and C. Wednesdays provide teachers with the opportunities to meet with their administrators for faculty meetings, their grade level teams for team meetings, and any small group instruction that is needed with their students. Teachers can also use any additional time for planning on Wednesday.
The outcome of this election, you know, I think a lot of Democrats...
Just like in phase one, we have staged a lower school classroom. So you can see an example of what this would look like. You'll notice the distance between the students that will be adhered to and the limited items that are available in the classroom and on the wall. This is in accordance with the protocols outlined by our health and wellness team.
And then here are pictures for an intermediate school classroom setup.
Again, we are moving the middle school to a hybrid reopening during phase two as well. Each grade level would be split into two cohorts of in-person students. There would be the students returning to campus 2 days a week for in-person learning, and the other 2 days students would log in and complete synchronous learning via Zoom. If a student chooses to remain virtual, they will receive synchronous instruction over Zoom 4 days a week. On the slide, you can see a snapshot of what a middle school teacher's schedule would look like. Cohort A meets in person on Monday and Tuesday, and cohort B meets in person on Thursday and Friday. Cohort C is the group of students that will choose to remain virtual.
So if we take a look at this middle school schedule, you'll see it mimics a regular school day. Students will begin to arrive at 7:30 a.m. We're going to allow 30 minutes of arrival time to make sure students are entering the building in a safe manner and maintaining social distance. Throughout the day, students are able to see all five of their teachers. On Monday and Tuesday, the teachers will see cohort A in person at Odyssey. And while the teachers are meeting with their cohort A students in person, they'll be streaming on Zoom with cohorts B and C who are at home. On Wednesday, all groups of students will participate in Flex Wednesday. And then on Thursday and Friday, our cohort B students will be in person while cohort A and C will be receiving instruction synchronously via Zoom. What's different from the original proposal here is that all students are transitioning classes. So to accommodate for the transition of all students, there will be a staggered set of times. So only one grade level is traveling through the hallways during a given time. Classrooms are being rearranged to account for a limited movement during transitions for students, and students will not have access to their lockers. They will be able to bring their backpacks with them to keep everything inside.
Here is a middle school classroom that has been set up to demonstrate in-person learning.
So our students in grades 9 through 12 will have the option to remain in a virtual cafe. So the virtual cafe has been designed to monitor 25% of students in the building at a time for two separate cohorts. Over the course of the week, that means we can safely accommodate up to 50% of our student population at the high school level. Cohort one would be in attendance on Monday and Tuesday, and the second cohort will be monitored on Thursday and Friday. Again, that Flex Wednesday comes into effect here, so all students would be off campus on Wednesday. A survey will come out to families to assess the need of the virtual cafe. From the result, OCS will actively create the two cohorts based on appropriate grades and locations in the building. Facilitators for the virtual cafe will be staffed based on the number of groups within each cohort, and the day would run from 7:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. to accommodate transportation with the middle school. All high school students will follow a new schedule beginning at the start of phase two. So this will be to accommodate the need for that transportation, for those students participating in a virtual cafe. The schedule preserves the same amount of time that is currently being used for instruction. It will just begin 30 minutes earlier. Transportation, again, just to reiterate, will be running their buses as needed, and meals will still be provided to students in the high school level.
The board decision that we will be needing here is to approve the new outline plan for phase two.
We're going to preview the outline plans for phase three and phase four. In phase three, grades K to eight would remain with their same plan and will increase the capacity for the high school virtual cafe.
And if we could go to slide 29, thank you. Students in grades 9 through 12 will have the option to remain in a virtual cafe. Pending the number of students and families that are interested in electing to use the virtual cafe, we will reevaluate to determine if we can offer the virtual cafe at a larger capacity up to 50% per grade level, or be able to offer the cafe for more days. Just like in phase two, these students would be in the building from 7:30 a.m. to 2:20 p.m. There will be transportation that is offered as well as breakfast and lunch to all students in attendance. And we would anticipate this to begin on January 4th.
So with phase four, we'll have the high school students join the hybrid learning plan for their building. Again, all students in kindergarten through eighth grade will remain with the schedules that were already outlined in phase two. Under this plan, OCS will bring back up to 50% of students on campus 2 days a week. We'll begin with a breakdown of the high school structure. So unlike the other three buildings where there will have where we have three cohorts, the high school will be split into two cohorts. Cohort A will be receiving instruction in person at Odyssey, while cohort B will be receiving synchronous instruction virtually with their teachers through Zoom. Students will be on campus from 7:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. During that time, students will continue to be offered their grab-and-go breakfast and will be served lunch. All students, grades 9 through 12, will remain virtual on Wednesdays and continue to follow their Flex Wednesday schedule.
On the slide, you can see a snapshot of what a high school teacher schedule would look like on slide 31. On Monday, teachers would meet with their cohort A students in person at Odyssey, while cohort B students complete their asynchronous work for the day at home. On Tuesday, teachers would meet with their cohort B students virtually through Zoom, while cohort A students would complete their asynchronous work for the day at home. The same schedule would then be repeated on Thursday and Friday. All students grades 9 through 12 will remain virtual on Wednesdays and follow a Flex Wednesday schedule where they can complete any asynchronous work for the week. This will allow for the building to have a day without students for further cleaning. Teachers can also continue to hold synchronous or live small group instruction as needed via Zoom, as well as complete their office hours.
So again, here is a picture of a high school classroom that is staged and ready for phase four learning.
So as a result, we are looking for the board to acknowledge the phase three and four structure that was outlined and provide the team with any feedback that they would like to see for the November 18th board meeting. I have been seeing some things pop up in the chat regarding virtual supply lists or hybrid supply lists and uniforms. All of that information will be communicated when we send out the parent commitment survey.
Back in Juliana, thank you so much. I will pass the baton over to Brittany as chairperson for the Health and Wellness Committee to provide the update around the metrics and walk us through the examples of how these metrics would be used.
Good evening. We're gonna flip to the next slide there. And we're gonna just go over our metric one other time. Again, this is focusing on bringing students on campus during phase two through phase four. So the metric proposed is new cases, percent of persons testing positive, daily average hospitalizations, and the R factor are trending down for a period of at least 2 weeks on at least two of these measures. Again, we're recognizing that the board may go against this recommendation and it is their final decision. Next slide. So this is the snapshot of the state for the last week. It's the week of October 24th through the 30th. In the new cases, we are in the red zone with 111. with the percent of testing positive, we're at 3.2%, and the average daily hospitalizations, we are at 10. With that being said, the middle measure did change 2 weeks ago by Governor Carney. It previously was the percent of people that were testing positive. We'll get into that a little bit further in a couple more slides. So prior, we were looking at the percent of people that were testing positive, and that was actually the measure that we had had been voted on by the board at the last meeting. So I did just do a couple snapshot days leading up to this. So this is the 31st, the 1st, and the 2nd, and these are how these measures are trending. We also had put the R factor into that. With that being said, the R factor has been a little volatile. It's been up, it's been down. It is a little bit harder to trend as far as path forward. So I just do want to make people aware of that. Anybody that's unaware, the R factor looks at if one person in the community has COVID-19, how likely it is to be transmitted to others. It's a snapshot of more of like a spider web picture of if how it's transmitted from person to person and how quickly it would take over your community. So applying our measure currently to, if we looked at last week, what would that look like for Odyssey and reopening? So looking at our first measure, a decrease of new cases, the answer there would be no. We went from the yellow to the red. Number two, the percent of persons testing positive, trending down, and that one's a no. Again, I just want to highlight that I have highlighted there measure change in the middle of the second column. Prior to the October 17th, they were looking at percent of people that were positive instead of percent of tests. So that's why in the right-hand column, I do down at the bottom, I do have what that measure actively is. So we just need to be aware that there was a change in that measure. So it didn't kind of change, but going forward, the percent of tests that are positive is what they're actually reporting on the dashboard. We can still look at that percent of positive. The average that's demonstrated there is 8.6, and that is a rise from last week. So no, that measure was not met. Number three, the percent of tests that are positive. No, that is also trended up. The average daily hospitalizations, did we meet there? And yes, we did. That did decrease. The R factor, is that on a downward trend? It is not. It is highly volatile, but overall the trend was up instead of down. I know going forward, we probably need to look at some of these measures and which ones we might place more stake in. The health and wellness group felt very strongly that the new cases, persons testing positive and testing positive are probably, those percentages are probably the most important going forward. So just to break that out a little bit further, we did pull out Newcastle County. All of our students and staff, for the most part, are coming from the entire county. So it's really hard to just look at one zip code because we would be missing quite a lot of our population. So taking a look a little bit deeper, the first column, new cases, that's red for Newcastle County. The percent of tests that are positive is yellow. And the average daily hospitalizations, that is actually green for Newcastle County. So just looking at trends, again, just because the metric changed and kind of how Newcastle County started to be pulled out, there is only 2 weeks of reportable data that's on the Newcastle County Public Health Dashboard. So looking at the first column, new cases, that one is trending up. It had moved from yellow to red. Percent of tests that are positive, also trending up. And daily hospitalizations has actually trended down in the green. So again, just looking at that data quickly, the R factor is actually not available for the county, so I didn't put that on here. And then in our top column, I did just include a little bit of data based on age bracket, county based, so we can see how Newcastle County fares to the other counties. So the recommendation would be that the board would look at the at a two-week mark prior to the date that is decided for opening, and then compare that to the metrics to guide, is it safe to open? And then just to dive a little bit deeper on personal protective equipment for staff, we are actively providing masks, face shield, and desk protectors for all staff. All requests that are specialized, we're going to address on a need base. So for an example of that would be children with a hearing deficit. We are providing visual panels of face masks, which are clear so you can read lips. People can read your lips also. We're providing those to children and staff. Student, we're going to ask them to bring a mask daily with them from home. We'll also ask them to have a spare mask in their backpack or their side bag, whatever they decide to bring. Each classroom is going to have an emergency supply pack. It's going to have additional masks in the event that a child's mask or teacher's mask breaks. There'll be another one that's available in the event that they don't have a spare. Each classroom is going to have a gallon-sized container of hand sanitizer for use. And then this is, I know, a hot topic. What are we going to do when someone is sick? So every building level RN has been trained on the processes from DOE and DPH. We'll be following the tools and utilizing that practice. If it's an ill staff member, we're going to ask them to vacate the grounds immediately. If it's an ill child, we're going to call parent or guardian and request that they're picked up within an hour. We are going to streamline a process with administration if there's a delay. Really, that child needs to be picked up within 1 hour. Students may only return to school after they've been sent home ill, if they have a negative COVID test, clearance by a medical provider, or a period of 10 days. Some cases, symptomatically, it's going to be closer to 14 days prior to return without a negative COVID or clearance by a medical provider. And that is actually a process from DOE and Delaware Department of Health. Suspected COVID cases will be dealt with immediately and placed in isolation until pickup. We're going to show you an isolation space in just a second. Again, we just want to focus on this is not an emergency. It needs to be thought out carefully and clearly before any decisions are made. So we are going to work on that, just so we're thinking through the process, making sure everyone's safe. So as a positive case has resulted, we're going to confer with DPH, which we have done, and get the recommendations as far as intervention needs to take place. Traditionally, we're going to call, we're going to explain the case. There's actually paperwork we complete and fax to DPH. And then usually we get a call back from the epidemiologist within an hour to discuss a path forward. Each case is going to be case by case review. There's no set standard of exactly what happens. It really is immediate and succinct calculations of what's going to happen. Isolation, just to clarify, would mean to be done with anybody that's a close contact. The CDC has just changed their definition of a close contact, and that's anyone with interaction of less than 6 feet for a cumulative period of 15 minutes. So if we have 3 5-minute interactions, that adds up to a cumulative period of 15 minutes. If those three interactions were less than 6 feet, then I would need to isolate from the person that tested positive. This is going to be really important. If the school adopts the 3 feet on the school bus, that is going to be less than that 6 feet. A traditional school ride on the school bus is more than 15 minutes.
Brittany, before we go to the picture, there is a question in the chat about notification once we reopen. What are the protocols to notify if someone in school or the child's class has COVID?
So if someone tested positive, we would notify that someone in the building has tested positive to the entire campus. We would not identify the classroom. If there was a risk when the case was reviewed with DPH, we would let you know that there's concern that your child was a close contact or the teacher was a close contact or what have you. So that information would be adequately communicated, but as far as specifically what classroom it happened in, we would not identify.
Thank you.
This is a sample of the isolation space. This is actually Nurse Venutis' office in the lower school. Every nurse's office now has a isolation space with a door that is closed. Everything has been removed from there except for either a bed or a chair. Some have a chair, some have a bed. And this is where your child will wait with the door closed until their parent or guardian or an authorized person comes to pick them up.
Thank you, Brittany. So this brings us...
One more thing.
Yep, sorry.
Just to clarify for the board or anyone that's looking at this presentation, in the appendix, I've added definitions of percent of positive, the CDC's definition of close contact, and the R factor, just if you would like some more information about those. Thank you.
Thank you, Brittany. So this brings us to the end of the presentation. At this point in time, we will be continuing with the implementation process into next week. and continue the implementation process for a reopening of the K-8 as requested by the board in terms of being able to accelerate the reopening of the high school. We were scheduled to reopen K-5 on December 7th. The acceleration of opening 6-8 into December. Based on this presentation, we believe that we would be able to do that, subject to the revision of the health and wellness metrics that would have to occur by the end of this month. And so at that time, we would have to ask the board to hold a special meeting to assess the status of the school and the status of the state trends and metrics and make a final decision of whether we will proceed with the reopening on December 7th.
Thanks, Ricardo. Is that it for all your slides?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to open it up to the board members for any questions, clarifications.
If you could clarify, why do we have this discrepancy between 3 feet social distancing in the buses and 6 feet in the classrooms? And what problems could that potentially create?
The key driver, Eva, as previously mentioned, is if under the analysis that we did with the transportation department and assuming the basic ridership of buses, and we retain the percentage of riderships in K-5 at 60% in 6-12, in a closer to 80-85%. And as we reopen and we maintain a 6-foot ridership, 6-foot social distancing on the buses, we would be able to only accommodate 12 students on each bus. And that would spike the number of buses that we would have to contract with at a rate of about $192 a day per bus. And we're looking at probably 20, 25 additional buses to support that social distancing, parameter. Throughout the state, this is the same pressure that all districts and charter schools are facing. And if we were to collectively follow the 6 feet social distancing, there wouldn't be enough buses or bus drivers to accommodate the demand.
So how many students are usually in a bus?
Anywhere from 50 to 72.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments from the board members?
Yeah, I just want a clarification. When all staff are expected to be on campus on November 30th, that was actually part of the presentation that was given in October, right? That just stayed the same from the October. On anything, or is it just that if the faculty shows up on the 30th, what kind of technology will they be provided with? Will all faculty have, say, like double screens, the appropriate technology needed to deliver the lessons?
I don't know if you, Jackie, or Juliana want to tackle that with regards to it. It's going to be different in the different grade levels with regards to the specific technology needs, for the different teachers.
Yeah, I can take that. So we are
looking at boom microphones. We are considering what is going to be needed. We are going to meet with some teachers from each building to see exactly what is best for their setup. So for instance, if we have a teacher in the middle school who's doing the dual modality, they will need two screens using their laptop and a desktop. So we are identifying specifically with those teachers and in specific those buildings on what they need so we can meet with IT and make sure that everybody is good to go.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, thanks. Any other comments, questions by the board members?
I have a clarifying question on the health and wellness metrics. I have two questions. One, could you pull up the slide that goes through the phases and the dates? I think it was toward the beginning. And so while you're doing that, my question is, I think, you know, one of the phases comes up quite quickly. I think it's November 7th or something like that. And so I'm wondering, given that the...
Is this the slide you're looking for?
Maybe, sure. So phase one begins, this says November 9th, yeah. So given where we are right now from a trending standpoint and a metric standpoint, let's say we approve everything in here, would that mean then that we would not proceed with phase one on November 9th since we don't meet the criteria for the 2 weeks? Because last week, at least the example, I think it was last week, was sort of trending in the wrong direction? Or how do we think about the impact of the health and wellness metrics on some of the earlier phases? Like, that's my first question. Let me pause and let you answer that one.
So the health and wellness metric is aimed at starting at phase two. The thought behind that was the phase one that you're identifying on 11-9, that is a very specialized learning environment for those children. Okay. The volume of children expected to be on campus is extremely small.
Got it. Okay. And then when you think about starting in phase two, kind of on a go forward basis, so you have this sort of moment in time measurement to say, do we kick off phase two, yes or no? So let's say it's a yes. How are we thinking about go forward after that? So let's say the state is still in a situation where schools are, you know, permitted to be open in a hybrid mode. If our sort of enhanced metrics are going in the wrong direction, are we saying we're staying open once we open until or unless there's a change at the state level? Or is it, you know, case by case, week by week? How do you think about ongoing after we open initially?
So if we make the decision to open, I think the decision to be closed would have to be uniquely evaluated. So for example, and I gave this example to some of the team members, if my three children all test positive and we do not think that it happened at Odyssey because we all live in the same home, we're in close distance, we don't wear masks, that really wouldn't be a reason to close. If we had three children that attend, let's say the Boys and Girls Club as a pod on their days that they're asynchronous, not at school, and let's say their last day at school was Tuesday, they test positive for COVID on Friday, chances are they probably acquired it there at that pod setting. If we find that there's five positive children in a classroom or three positive children on a bus, that really would be a reason to take a step back and evaluate with DPH what's going on here at school that's creating this incident. Does that answer your question?
I think so. And so I guess separately though, if it's outside of Odyssey, like let's say Odyssey actually looks really good, right? Mm-hmm. We have, you know, few infections or few issues. But in New Castle County, let's say, you know, some numbers are trending in the wrong direction, but at the state level, we're still open. It sounds like what we'll do then is say, okay, state, we check the box, we're okay. We hit our initial opening metric, and then we're really focused on what's happening in the school where it's most directly impacting mm-hmm. our, you know, students and teachers. Is that kind of how you think about it?
I do. And actually, okay. There was conversation on the last press conference that if we, in fact, do go red on multiple areas, they may, in fact, extract that data and figure out if it's related to a long-term care facility, such as a nursing home. And if that's what's sending the masses into the red zone, it's not as concerning to the state. I think that really is going to have to be an open and honest conversation about, are we keeping our children and our staff and our community safe?
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Brittany.
And at the state level, Erin, if I'm not mistaken, two of the metrics have to be in the red now. In the beginning, I think it was only one. Now, two of them have to be in the red for reclosing. But really, before last week's change of metrics, if we were with the metrics that were up to last Tuesday, two of them would be in the red today.
And then just to clarify, I'm sorry if this is repeat for people that know it. Percent of test positive is all the tests that were taken, how many of those were positive. The percent of people positive, how many single people have taken tests and those are positive. So if I went and took 50 tests, I would still be one person that would count in those statistics, where in the percent of tests that are positive, all 50 of my tests would count as separate incidents. So the employees that are going weekly to get their tests done, they're all going into those as separate incidents of tests.
Can I get some clarification? Is there a difference between need-based academic groups and complex needs groups?
I can't answer that.
For anyone. Were you able to hear my question?
Yes, I don't know. Juliana, Jackie, do you want to tee up an initial answer?
Can you repeat the question, please?
Sure. Is there a difference between need-based academic groups and complex needs groups?
Yes. So our complex needs students are our BNC setting students.
Okay.
And I think if you're referring back, Mary Ann, to the original conversations that we were having, in the August timeframe, yeah. I think we were looking at a bigger picture of all potential needs. And then we sort of said, you know, how do we prioritize bringing specific needs, you see?
Right, I just wanted some clarification on that. So is need-based, is it like kids who have 504s? Is there a distinction on that, or those that have IEPs, or, you know, those that have families where both parents are working?
So I think from my perspective, and in terms of those conversations that we were having, we were thinking initially, yes, at the front end of those needs are we're using complex needs, the IEPs, the 504s. And then we were coming down to aspects of students that over time in this environment could be struggling, mm-hmm. and needed potential special attentions. You see, so when we started this analysis, the need base was very high level, and then we started segmenting it in terms of, you know, how do we bring students back, in a more controlled manner. But no, we were not necessarily looking at, specific needs of childcare for the, for the 0 to 5 population. We sought to address the childcare with the staff virtual cafes, let's say, in terms of staff coming back.
Okay. I'm also still a little cloudy about what exactly the virtual cafe will entail. Is it like the kids are going to be sitting at a table and the adults kind of walk around, or, you know, do they raise their hand when they need help and then they come around and help them out? Or is it pods set up, say like one adult for 5 children?
So Marianne, I can jump in here. I mean, we are sending a survey to parents coming out soon with like a fuller, more full intent. Until we have those numbers, we're not going to be able to fully answer that question. Most likely, it will be, at the moment, I know the staff virtual cafe, for example, is going to be manned by a couple individuals just walking around to help. I don't think it'll be pod-based, but it does depend on the final numbers.
Okay, thank you.
I am, Marianne, I am planning that quite extensively right now. So in addition to completing their asynchronous work, which will hopefully alleviate any pressures that parents may be feeling at home to complete it with their children, we're going to work on helping them complete everything from their specials to any other card that their teachers may be assigning. We are doing staggered recess times to get the kids outside and get them moving. We are planning some socially distanced activities for them to do outside during recess, which will be helpful. And while yes, they will be seated when they're inside, but yes, raising their hand, monitors will be able to help them make sure that they're staying on task when they are working on their assignments.
Okay, thank you, Juliana.
Just one quick confirmation. So first of all, it's great that that we're getting the Chromebooks for at least some of the grades soon. So great job there. I know it's been a real issue with supply chain related to that. And also really great job with the plan, everyone. This is incredibly detailed, just really great job. So the only thing I just wanted to confirm, for the grades where the Chromebook delivery will lag a bit into January to March timeframe, so I'm assuming the expectation is that we would have students bring their own device to the extent that they had one on campus when they're on campus. And then that's where it sounded like we had 100 or so devices. If a student will be on campus, doesn't have a Chromebook from a grade level perspective and doesn't have a personal device to bring. Am I thinking about that right?
Yes, absolutely. So ideally we will be able to distribute K-1 and 2, their devices that have been issued to them now that they're in. We will then get all of those devices back that we lended for those students. Ideally, we will be able to then provide those additional devices to the students that would need them and don't have it available to bring in their own device. Be it because they received a desktop from Odyssey or were using a reliable personal desktop at home. So based on all of these things, we do believe that we all students that would need access to I call it a mobile device, either a Chromebook, a laptop, or an iPad, they would have that to be able to use in school.
Thank you.
So I just want to be clear on what you're saying. If a family has their own laptop, they will be able to bring that on campus if they've not received one from Odyssey, or that's not what we're saying?
Correct. So if we do not have all devices, IT is capable of providing an open network, which will then allow for families or students to bring on their personal device to connect to Odyssey internet.
Okay, thank you. And then, Ricardo, this question is, I guess, more towards you. There's a lot of questions around the cleaning of the buses. So can we just talk about briefly how they will be cleaned, when they will be cleaned?
And Evan, are you on?
I am. Good evening. When the buses will be cleaned. So the buses will be cleaned after every single route. So every single seat will be sprayed after every single route. We're also spraying the buses down with a solution from facilities that is supposed to stick to the seats for up to 45 days and also kills viruses. And we're going to do that. That period is 45 days per the product, but we're going to do it every 30 days. And then again, to reiterate, after every single route, every single seat is sprayed. And the windows are also going to be open. We've been running, we spoke about this in our meeting earlier. We've been running red clay routes just a couple days, and it was 38 degrees on the first morning. And the hatches were open, the windows were open, and nobody is complaining. We're making sure we're keeping these kids safe.
Thank you. Thanks for that clarification. Thanks for all the work.
Can you hear me?
Did everybody hear me? Yeah,
yes.
Okay.
Yes. I'm sorry. I said thank you. I wasn't sure if you heard that. Thank you very much.
Okay. Silence is good a lot of the time.
Quick question. Okay.
Elias.
There are a couple of options put forward in terms of preferred option and less preferred option in the phase two reopening part. And I know you're looking for some sort of guidance on that from the board, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Uh, Are you speaking specifically to the, you know, the solution for phase two because we don't have the computers?
Well, no, I think Jackie had basically stated that there was a preferred option and a less preferred option. One was a half day versus a full day. So I just wanted to make
sure. Option one and option two.
Right.
I can say that we are recommending that half day morning so students can receive direct instruction from their teacher and then the teacher can give their full attention to these two other cohorts that would be synchronously receiving instruction in the afternoon.
And that's for the K to five group, and they have the option of basically staying in a virtual cafe the remainder of the day or getting picked up at noontime.
Absolutely.
With their own personal transportation or staying in for the buses at the normal dismissal time.
Correct.
Yes. And if I can just jump in, you know, for those very young learners that, you know, face-to-face contact, be it in person or through Zoom with a teacher daily for those 4 days that we're providing instruction is really critical. As opposed to doing asynchronous work for multiple days and having a full day with a teacher. And again, as Juliana mentioned, the virtual cafe is going to be inclusive of some, you know, other activities and when the weather is permitting, you know, time outside. So it would be students staying on would have some developmentally appropriate activities to do. And the method of instruction and the delivery of instruction to all of those young learners would be more developmentally appropriate if we take the first option.
Okay. And the other question I had was, and this is something that is typical in normal school operations, is are things like before and after care, is that being considered at all in any of these as part of any reopening? I didn't see anything clearly stating anything on before or after care.
I think we've been focused on the academics, like the sheer delivery of academics as opposed to those auxiliary programs. Correct me if I'm wrong.
At this time, we have not focused on before, you know, like we had in the traditional setup, the before care and the after 3 o'clock or 2:45 care allies.
Okay. I think it's something that we need to think about while it's not in this briefing here. How would we handle it? And if we can't do it in December, do we start doing it in January, for example? Or when does that get turned on? Right? Because there are parents that really need that if they're bringing their kids to school. And how do we, what's the opportunities for us to try and figure out a solution for that?
We would be, absolutely. We can go back to the drawing board and, you know, flesh out some potential solutions or proposals for what that might look like.
The other question I had was, and I wasn't really clear on what you had put out there in terms of the timing for the phase four. Are we talking about starting that up in January? Is that correct? Because I didn't see any dates on there.
No, we talked briefly about just highlighting the acceleration from phase four to phase three. Acknowledge that request has been recognized. And that we are pushing hard to see how we can make that happen. And the key driver, as per our conversations, Elias, offline, has been that, yes, we need to complete the retrofitting of Building 23. And that includes all the furniture and the technology, and which we hope to have done by the winter holidays, which would then allow us to entertain the reopening of the anticipation in terms of the reopening of the high school from February to January.
Yeah, and that was the key driver. I know that the building not being complete was a major factor in pushing the start of anything in person with the high school, but with the ability to, looks like, have the high school ready in December, can we get some plans in place to at least entertain the opportunity to start in-person learning for the high school students beyond the virtual cafes in January if possible as a plan. Now, we like you said, the health conditions may not be there for us to do that, right? And we may say no. But if the conditions are in place and the health conditions are good enough for us to do something, that we have a plan in place to move forward with some in-class learning.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Ricardo.
And our goal would be to have a first draft of that conversation, or a first framework for that conversation at the upcoming board meeting on the 18th.
We do have a plan in place for that. We are ready with our phase four plan. We are ready with our hybrid plan and what that would look like. It is essentially the reason why we're not looking at that specifically tonight is because we wanted to give a little bit more time so that we can see where we are with the construction, where we are with our orders of supplies and furniture, and make sure that all those are lined up to be completed on time. If they do look like everything will be completed on time, then we will be able to push that up and approve and accelerated at that
point. Yeah, we just wanted to see about getting kids in there. And I know that maybe even if we can't have all the items in there, if we can start doing the one-way traffic and other things.
Yes.
Not every class necessarily needs to be fully furnished in order to start, probably, right? And so we can, I guess, work around that.
So we would need the certificate of occupancy. Once we have that certificate of occupancy and we start getting that furniture in, it will be, I believe that the furniture will probably arrive right around the same time as the certificate of occupancy, if any of our past things have kind of proven, and we've in some cases even had the furniture before we've gotten the CO. So once we have that CO, we will be able to get that started and be able to get all of our plans finalized. We're just kind of looking at the dates, and we don't want to, at this juncture, we're going to be sending out information about the virtual cafe and encouraging students to opt into the virtual cafe. Once we have that established and they're able to do that, we'll be able to give a little bit more time on that construction, see where we land.
Okay, that sounds good.
As an initial matter, echo all of the thanks extended to our staff for their efforts at getting the school open in a safe way. I'm wondering, how do these recommendations stack up against guidance from the state and other charter schools that may be similarly situated to OCS? So in other words, is our approach more aggressive than what the state suggests, more conservative, more aggressive than what other schools are doing, more conservative? Someone could just generally walk through that'd be helpful.
Sure. So the recommendations from DOE were provided, and all the stipulations were on those. Any school could follow those as a basis, or any school could be more restrictive than those. The only recommendation and requirement was you could not be less restrictive. Some of the other schools are using 3 feet instead of 6 feet, and that is a decision that a school makes on their own accordance of what they can accommodate. With that being said, with the changes that have been made by the CDC, if we endorse the 3 feet instead of the 6 feet, that definitely is going to lead to more closures, and it is definitely going to lead to more isolation of other children that are in close proximity. Some of the schools that have closed in the state more recently that have been open is because they are in fact endorsing that 3 foot. And some of the high schools, middle school age children, it is much more difficult to have cohorted groups similar to your K-5 population. With that being said, we are probably more aggressive than a lot of other school districts. Some of the other charter schools have not opened. Charter schools, as we all know, have more limited resources than your bigger school districts.
And let me just compliment that. Charter School of Wilmington is planning to reopen on January 4th. The plans that have been submitted by Newark Charter for reopening are for reopening after Thanksgiving. We have an Aspira that has reopened kindergarten and first and ninth grade and their honors eighth graders in two separate buildings. They are planning to shut down. So they've just reopened a couple of weeks ago, but they're planning to shut down at Thanksgiving. and then reopen only in January, so the month of December. They're taking it as a precautionary measure. And, you know, so there is no one size fits all plan. You know, Eastside, as I've mentioned before, has been open since September, but with 450 students, and really the K-1 and 2 being the basis of reopening, and at, you know, 15% in terms of student density, plus the fact that they have opted to do staff and student testing on a weekly basis because they are a community site. So every school, at least, you know, the ones that we've seen in the charter space, are implementing different strategies.
Thank you both.
Thanks, Ricardo. I understand that there are over 30 charter schools in Delaware, and there's very few of them are actually opening, or they actually plan to open later and are moving up some of those plans. And we're trying to accommodate everyone as well too, as best we can, in a safe manner. But understanding that our priority too is to keep the staff and the students and everybody safe, while providing a top education. And we know that bringing them into school is going to be different than normal. It's not going to be like it was in the past, particularly under these conditions. So we need to be prepared that it's not going to be exactly the way it was when we left in March, right? It's going to be a little bit different in terms of how the kids interact with each other, even in school, until we're past a lot of this. And so people should just understand that any opening is going to be, or any in-class work is going to be different model, different way of doing things, different way of interacting than it was previously. So, but yeah, and thanks to everybody. So do we have any additional questions from the board? Because what I wanted to do was open up for some comments from the board before we proceed. Comments from the public.
Elias, this is Rodrigo. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Yeah, I think it'd be good just to go back to that issue you mentioned on the option one, option two, just to provide some more color, and you can really differentiate and understand the differences from the student perspective. Option one, if I understand correctly, a student who will go back will basically have face time with the teacher half a day, 2 days a week, and then they either go back home to do asynchronous work at home, or they stay on the virtual cafe. And then the other 2 days of the week, they are basically at home, online, I think, having the typical Zoom meetings in the morning, and then doing asynchronous work at in the afternoon. Option two, if I understand correctly, now you have the same student going back to school. They would have classroom FaceTime with the teacher for 2 days a week, the full day. And then 2 days of the week, they would be home, basically in front of the computer on Zoom meetings the whole day, because now they're watching, they're following what the teacher is teaching the other cohort. Am I understanding correctly the option two?
That is correct. So the two full days they would be in person, 8:15 to 3:45, and then the 2 days they would not be in person, they would be streaming in under this option. If a student elects to remain virtual, they would be streaming in all 4 days of instruction.
Okay. And then maybe provide some color on the challenge then when you say in developmentally inappropriate for kids to sustain engagement on their own all day, is that associated with the kids that stay home and all gotta be on the computer all day for 4 days a week? And if so, how is that different than what's happening right now with everybody?
I think what we're talking about, the developmentally appropriate difference between the two models, is not whether they're on the computer or not. It's whether they're doing synchronous or asynchronous work. So if we had a full day instructional model, students would be doing asynchronous work, so like self-paced videos, stuff like that, for days, because the teacher would be in person with other cohorts. So that's what we mean about that not being developmentally appropriate. When it comes to students staying on the computer for their instruction and whether or not that's developmentally appropriate, parents are choosing that from a safety standpoint in this model. So it's a little bit different. Does that answer your question?
I'm not sure I understood. So can you just say it again, please?
So I think that the developmentally appropriate aspect that we're talking about refers not to whether or not students are learning on the computer at all, because that's the reality of the situation we're dealing with. And some parents are going to be choosing the computer in because of safety. What it's referring to is whether or not students will be doing asynchronous instruction or synchronous instruction. So are they having like live Zoom classes where they're actually interacting with somebody, or are they having videos that they're watching, or are they like live streaming a Zoom class where the teacher is engaged with people in person but not able to give them one-on-one attention? That's what we're referring to. So by having the half-day model, the teacher, whether the teacher is in person or Zooming with the cohort who isn't there or the virtual only students, is giving full attention to either the in-person cohort or the online cohort and not having to split attention, and students are not having to just watch a live stream of somebody who is not fully engaged with them, or just watch videos and do asynchronous work because there's a full day of instruction going on in the classroom for the teacher.
Okay. I think I understand what you're saying. The teacher would likely pay more attention to the students that are in class and be less effective and attentive to the students who are on the computer, watching the video via the computer.
I mean, for the very young kids, because of the amount of attention, especially given the need to maintain the social distancing and safety norms, I don't see how a teacher could provide meaningful instruction and safety monitoring in the classroom while also paying attention to students live streaming on a Zoom. It's just very difficult and honestly not developmentally appropriate, I think, for that age. Mm-hmm.
And when you say that, are you really thinking the whole K through five, or are you focusing more on the K, maybe first and second grade? And is there a way to differentiate grades 3, 4, and 5?
I really believe K through five. Look, my experience is with K-2, so I can speak to that. But I think before middle school, it is hard to have those learners learning autonomously while live streaming a video. You know, here we're, you know, parents are unhappy, and a lot of teachers and students are struggling to do a very engaged, you know, Zoom where the teacher is really looking at every single student and trying to engage them on Zoom. Now, if we move that to a live stream, I believe that we're just taking out a layer of interpersonal communication that's really important, specialized, individualized attention to the student. I believe it applies for K-5, but I can let someone else know that more, since my experiences with K-2.
I'm gonna actually piggyback off of what Ursula is saying. The reason that the middle school decided to go with the live streaming is because we do feel it's a little more age appropriate for middle school. In a middle school classroom, the teacher will be teaching face to face to possibly 7 to 8 students while live streaming. As the students get older, they can work more independently. These students can be told to now go on to an asynchronous assignment and then return back. They can be put into breakout rooms and can have the ability to then come back. They can have the maturity level is there, where the teacher can go to a small group that's face to face while the students are working on Zoom, and then come back to those that are on Zoom, where I don't think that it's really age appropriate for the lower grades.
Okay.
Yeah. Just to add a little bit of, you know, a couple of other data points, Aaron Bass at Eastside Charter, when they reopened with their K-2, they set it up as you're suggesting, that You know, there is the teacher at the same time teaching in class and through Zoom. And what they had to do was have a monitor to help work with the students that are in the classroom because of the divided attention that the teacher had to bestow on the smallest kids while still being able to engage the students that were remote. So it was a challenge that they were able to accommodate because of how small a cohort of students were actually coming back at the lower grades while keeping the upper grades, and they're a K-8, you know, so they kept the upper grades remote.
Now, I appreciate the caller. I think this is important because I think this, some parents would probably, you know, without the context, obviously say, hey, I'm sending the kid to school, might as well stay there the whole day, right, having, you know, be in the classroom and as opposed to just being half day in the classroom. And so this, I think I wanted to have this dialogue to bring the transparency here and the logic behind this, the all accommodation. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions from board members?
I have one. I'm just looking at the presentations from October 21st and today's to just to see, you know, what are the differences and all. And on the October 21st one, the phases one and two were expected to happen, you know, regardless of the metrics, because it meant like bringing in small groups. It also had it on in December, like a phase one plus, where, you know, you could have two cohorts and all of that. But now with this, with the current timeline, and I just want to reiterate that, you know, reporting on 11/20 had nothing to do with the motion at the last board meeting. That was what was presented. With this one, the metrics apply to phases 2, 3, and 4. So the health metrics now apply to phases 2, 3, and 4, whereas and correct me if I'm wrong, whereas in October, they applied only to phases 3 and 4.
Marianne, can I jump in?
I
think we've
I just want to clarify that. Yeah.
I think we've changed what phase two is, and that's why. So phase two, if I'm not mistaken, is now our 50-50 model, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that is when the health metrics would definitely need to be applied because it is the heaviest lift that we're doing. Phase two in the first case was expanding the small groups that we're allowing on campus. And so way fewer students, and that's why we weren't looking at the health metrics. We've now shifted and made phase two be the more ambitious reopening. And that's definitely when I believe that for health and safety reasons, we would absolutely need to maintain those.
Right. So in phase one, like suppose I wanted to bring like say a few students who I know are not getting it on Zoom into the classroom. Is that a possibility or no?
That is, Marianne, that is a possibility. We have our small group form that we have pushed out to teachers. And if you'd like me to resend it to you, I can, where you just say that, who it is, the reason you're bringing students on campus. So then we just go through an approval process to make sure that we can give you the space needed
okay.
for that.
Yeah, Marianne, those are the pre-approval. That's the pre-approval process, right, process right. That's in all of the Thursday throwdowns.
Yeah. Thank you.
The health and wellness metrics that we're using, they're beyond what the state requires. Is that correct?
Correct. And the guidance from DOE was you could be more restrictive if your school or district decided to be.
My concern is if we choose to be more restrictive, that we're setting ourselves up to constantly start and hit the brakes, start and hit the brakes.
I think that was why I was asking once we start, I was trying to understand the same thing, Paul. It sounded to me like once we start, we will be a go until or unless there are specific extenuating circumstances where it's clear that there's spread in the school or really bad things going on in Newcastle County. I don't know if that's right, Brittany. That's kind of what I got from your answers to my questions, that it wouldn't be like we start and then the next week some metrics are up, but nothing has changed in Odyssey and we stop, and then we start 2 weeks later and stop. Is that, did I take what you said correctly?
No, I think that's correct. I think once we open, it would be hard to scale back unless something drastically changed. I think the difference, though, is, again, some of the other larger districts have more resources available than we do. Odyssey's buildings were not created to be school buildings. The ventilation, the narrow hallways, they're all big concerns as far as congestion in the hallways for children, even, you know, just grouping, coming in, going out, changing classes. Those are all things that we need to be transparent about to families, staff members with coming onto campus.
I have one more thing. So what happens when a teacher like gets tested? We're all reporting from 11:30 on from the end of November. A teacher gets tested. Is she expected to teach from home, from remote, for the next 2 weeks? And will she have time to? I'm thinking, I'd have my resources.
Yeah, tested or is positive, Marianne, just to clarify.
Sorry, if they tested positive. So I mean, that might be another subsequent question. If they get tested, do they stay at home until they get a result? And will they be able to get, like, let's say I have some books that I have to read aloud to my kids. Would I be allowed to go back into the classroom to get those books out?
So it's twofold. If you're just choosing to get a test because you're not symptomatic, you're just doing it for your personal health, you want to know what your status is, no, you don't have to isolate until those results come in because you don't have any suspect of why you're getting those tests. If you're going to get a test because you're symptomatic, you are not coming on campus. You're not getting books. You're not getting any materials. You pretty much are not passing go. You cannot come onto the grounds of the school campus. Per DPH, you should not be leaving your home if you test positive. You are truly excluded, you're isolating. Now, there's a difference between quarantine, which is what you're doing once you're positive. You can't leave, you can't go to the store. Isolating is what your family would do if you're positive and they're not. So they're supposed to be isolating, not directly with you. So it's a different level than quarantine, but they're isolating also. So your children would not be able to come to school if you have tested positive and you're an employee at school.
So Brittany, could you clarify that? So you said if you just want to know your status, you're not symptomatic. What if you are not symptomatic, but you have reason to believe, you know, you've been exposed heavily to someone, let's say your partner is, then you isolate, I understood correctly.
That's completely different. So if my spouse tests positive, I'm a presumed positive until different. So that's when I have to isolate. I'm not quarantined because I'm not positive, but I have to isolate because I live with my spouse who is positive. Same thing, it gets a little bit gray when it comes to children. So if you have a child that can isolate, quarantine independently, then it kind of isn't as clear. It gets a little bit muddy water. If you are a children that cannot care for themselves, you're 100% on quarantine with them because they need the care that you're going to provide. Kind of works the same for older adults that need help from their children. If their children are going every day to take care of him, they are going to be a person that needs to be isolated.
Okay. Thank you, Brittany.
And then just another piece I know has come up. How quickly will you know of a positive? If we send a child that is home sick, they're a presumed or expected to be positive. They are not positive at that point. So they need to go and get testing. When they go and get the testing sometimes can take 48 to 72 hours to come back. So that notification process may seem delayed, but in fact, it's actually not. We're taking the steps we need to as soon as we have that true positive.
All right, thank you, Brittany. I guess, barring any questions, I do want to open it up for public comments for up to 15 minutes.
I have one more question.
Go ahead, Eliza. Rodrigo.
Yeah, just regarding the parents who decide to start on a hybrid situation and then they get some comfort and they decide that now they want to, you know, come back. I mean, they start remotely and then they want to come back and have their kids join the hybrid and come to school, will there be specific windows for them to opt in or opt out, or vice versa, I guess, if a parent decides that they want to start and then they change their mind and want to go full virtual? Is that going to be certain? How is that brought? Has that been decided yet, or are you still working through that? And can they change on a dime and say, hey, tomorrow I want my kids to go to school, and or vice versa? How does that work?
So let me kick that off, and then Juliana or deans. For planning purposes, we need to ask parents to lock in on one of the options at this point in time. Because if not, it'll be very, very hard for the school deans to be able to program their activities and be able to allocate the students in the given cohorts. If we're seeing that for the in-person cohorts, there is a potential availability, yes, I believe we all want to be flexible. One of the things that we're still planning and discussing around this, Rodrigo, is, how do we allow people to opt in halfway through a marking period, or we have to define, do we have that flexibility during the marking period? Do we do it at the end of each marking period? And there has to be a criteria that will then allow us to select who would be allowed in or not, because if we just open up Pandora's box and we get a lot of demand, what's going to happen? We might not be able to meet the seating capability to be able to address that demand. So it's a little bit of both. We have started talking about that. I believe in the survey that we identified that is going to go out by the end of this week, there is going to be a request that parents do confirm whether they are planning to send their kids back or if they're planning to stay remote. Juliana, Jackie?
I agree with all of your saying, Ricardo. I think that captured it well.
And we have that question in the survey, right?
We do. The survey is extensive, so parents will be notified via Blackboard when it goes out of like a robocall, and it will be sent to emails, and we will also send out a reminder on when it needs to be completed. But we're just asking parents to really read through it thoroughly. We are attaching videos in it as well to make sure that you guys are making the best decision for your family.
All right, any last questions, comments from board members? I did want to open it up for some public comments for 15 minutes. I know a number of people had questions, and I know some folks were getting their questions answered in the chat by some of the administrators. So, Val, I'll turn it over to you, Val, to run it. Maybe Ken can help time, no more than 3-minute comments per individual. But do you have a list of folks, Val, that are looking to ask questions or make public comments?
We do, and
I didn't know there was a list, and I would like to ask a question.
What is your name? I'm happy to add you onto the list.
Yeah, my name is Bola, parent of Yewande and Yetunde.
Great. We should have enough time to accommodate folks to make the comments that they would like to make. So I'm going in the order that these comments were received. So I'll start with calling on Vanessa Simon.
Hi, thank you. So my question is, what happens if there's a teacher that is out of the country, through no fault of their own? What will happen to my child's class if that teacher is not able to return to the school building? And I guess a two-part to that would be that, what happens if a teacher, again, through no fault of their own, they have a medical reason for not returning to the building. What happens to our children's class in those cases.
Okay, thank you. And so right now we're taking comments. We'll capture all these questions and we'll see if we can wrap them up and get them out to everybody or answer them at the end if possible. Right now we're just taking comments.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't understand.
No, it's
okay,
no problem.
Thank you.
Great questions.
Next is Angela Smith.
You're on mute.
Okay. Hiya. I think I misunderstood because I also had questions, but I can just phrase it as a comment instead of a question. I think the committee did a great job and presented the information in a really great way tonight. So thank you for that. My primary comment is about the health metrics that are being used. My concern is I understand that they are more restrictive than what the state is recommending and what most other public schools are using. And my understanding of the way that it was presented is that it's going to be based on trends, whether these metrics are trending up and trending down in the 2 weeks before the proposed opening on December 7th. And my concern is that trends are just that, they're trends. And by definition, they're not statistically significant. So when you're basing it on a trend versus an absolute number, so, you know, saying, you know, less than 5% positive test cases would give a definitive yes or no versus just saying, all right, well, we're going to look at a trend. And with the way things are trending right now, things going up and down each week, you know, it seems like it's going to be luck of the draw. Is it, you know, if we're at 2 weeks, is that a week that's trending up? Okay, we're going to go back. Oh, no, that's a week that we're dropping down, so we're not going to go back to school. It seems like it should be based on more absolute data to determine whether we return versus just simply on a trend, which isn't significant.
So to be completely honest, we did have specific numbers. Those specific numbers were about where we were in August. We're not even close to those numbers. Those numbers, honestly, I personally felt like gave us hopelessness. Like we're never gonna be there. So we actually did remove those numbers. 4.5% for the percent of persons that are positive is actually about where we were in August when we made the decision as the board and the community that it was unsafe to open. That was what was on there. And actually in the last 2 weeks, we've actually removed those exact numbers because on some level, they weren't numbers that we feel like we'll ever reach in the short term here.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that even now, you know, it seems like the numbers with the trends are even unattainable. I mean, what was presented tonight was, you know, I think it was 1 out of 6 was the only one that met the metric. So it just seems that, you know, the increased restriction is in the same way seeming kind of hopeless. I think the plan is great and, you know, I'm excited about the direction and the potential of opening on December 7th. But with the current metrics, it just seems like that's going to be impossible to meet.
And that's why the tagline is on that slide that says, ultimately, it's the board's decision. I am not the only person that is on health and wellness. It is a team of parents, staff, administrators, all different workers that work at Odyssey. And that was the group's global decision as when they felt it was safe for everyone to return. Now, with that said, like we know that everyone may not agree with that.
Well, look, we'll clarify those metrics because there are both absolute and trending metrics that are being used. And so we'll clarify that in any announcement that goes out to folks so they understand what they should be watching as well too, as we move
thank
forward.
Thank you.
But thank you, Angela.
Next, we have Jamie Liberatore.
If that's closed, Val, I actually do have a list of questions, so I'd be more interested in answers than to generalize them into a statement.
Next is Patty Laszlo.
Yes, and it is a question because, and actually if you go to the top of the chat, it said send questions to Valerie and I sent a question to her. So to state that people should make comments instead of questions just is not, it's not appropriate. But my question is, what is the status of the headmaster at Odyssey? Because I've heard that administration is being referenced. I don't even know who administration is at Odyssey. And it is a trained skill set. And there are many people here that have done a fantastic job of putting forth a plan to make Odyssey go forward. I know in very difficult times, but a board member is not an administrator, is not a headmaster. So what is the status of that headmaster?
I think we sent out some information a few weeks ago. There should be a decision on that by the end of November.
Yeah, I heard in November. Actually, I thought it was more towards the beginning of November. So can we receive written information on what the status of the headmaster is at Odyssey?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have sent out updates every month as well, too, to folks on that.
Right. And I saw November, and I haven't seen that. So I'm asking I feel that it is missing at this meeting. So I am asking again for the status of the headmaster.
Thank you. Okay.
And next we have Mr. Bola.
I think you're on mute.
Let me start by seconding what the last person just said. I think also it's inappropriate to say we can make comments but not ask questions. We are parents. Number two, working in an HR for a large state agency, here is my question. Since we do not know who may come in with symptoms or not, is there a plan for temperature checks? A student could get on the bus from their home with my child, and they could be having symptoms, they could be having a fever. Is there temperature checks anywhere, whether when they enter the bus or when they get to the school? Because my child could be exposed to anything, whether during the bus ride or even in the school premises. Just want to know whether there's plans for temperature checks. And bearing in mind, especially from what I'm hearing in the news, with the winter months, things are spiking up, not going down.
The plan is for parents to assess their children prior to arriving on campus.
And I think that Ricardo did mention, he did reference the school pass, which is, a really great platform for doing the temperature check. The teachers can see that they've done the health screening. We can get notifications as students come to campus if they haven't done the screening. So it's really a really robust platform to organize all of that data for us.
Also, the Kinza thermometer program has been placed in the communications and out weekly. Families can apply for that and receive free thermometers to help with checking temps before arriving at school.
So the school has no plan to do temperature checks. Just let's hypothetically, parent, I just want to send my child to school because I have to go to work. Hypothetically, another child could get exposed. It's okay. Just trying to be clear that the school is not planning to do anything like that in terms of doing temperature checks at the point of entry to the premises.
I think the problem with doing it at point of entry is that it would cause students to bottleneck and be closer in closer proximity. So using something like the school pass would allow it to be done safely at home, because it is a time consuming thing to do. It would cause a bottleneck. And then doing that at home, you would submit that you have completed it. And so you would only be coming to campus if you had completed it, and the administrators and teachers would have access to see that you had completed your health screening.
Fever has actually moved down on the CDC recommendation of symptoms. It is not as high, and with children, it is even less prevalent. So temperature screening really isn't serving our children the best in a way that they would congregate and be more exposed less than 6 feet of distancing.
What about teachers? Are they being tested when they arrive for work?
Teachers are temp screening daily when arriving to campus, and that process will be continued.
Lastly, could a copy of this presentation be sent to parents so that we can have a more informed, a more educated information about this whole process? Is it possible?
I believe all of the board presentations are made available in the board bites, correct?
Thank you. Thank you.
There have been a lot of questions also about students coming to school sick. Just to clarify, DPH and DOE has been very clear with that process. And if a child is sent home by exclusion because they are ill, it is not the simple fever-free 24 hours. There's a whole nother process to return to campus. So their duration out of school is much longer. Plus, we're enlisting our community. Everybody wants to be back at school. We're hoping that everybody takes this seriously and is not sending a child they knowingly is ill onto campus.
And just to add to that, with Ms. Sabotha there, you know, we tend to think about buses, but we have a significant number of parents that drop their kids off. And if you've seen it on campus on any normal school day, you know, we've got cars lined up and backing behind buildings and so on, and asking and thinking of having these kids all temped with these very long lines adds to the time needed to then have the kids come into school in the morning, and it would affect potentially significantly the schedule on the start of the school day. So it is a logistical challenge and was discussed extensively internally in terms of being able to then optimize and balance the school schedule with the need for safety and well-being. And we came to the conclusion of it would be best to be able to partner with our families on that.
Thanks, Ricardo. Are there any other folks on the list? Val?
We do have somebody who asked me to read a letter that they had submitted. So I can go ahead and do that now. Hello, Odyssey family. My name is Ryan Adams. I'm a middle school English teacher at Odyssey, and this is my fourth year here. I love this school. I coach here. I'd like to send my daughter here when she is old enough. However, I need to publicly address how concerned I am with the proposal for an accelerated reopening plan at Odyssey. At the last board meeting, admin presented a plan that was created by nurses, teachers, facilities, staff, and leaders over the course of 2+ months. The board took these dates and began proposing new dates without any strategic planning of any kind. I would like to put it in perspective that we have already had positive COVID cases at Odyssey without any students attending the school yet. Expecting students and staff to begin returning next week with this amount of notice is almost unthinkable to me. As a teacher, I'm willing to accept the risk that being in the classroom places on my family. I'm signed up for this job and I am passionate about it. It is highly troublesome to hear so many openly state that if teachers don't want to rush back to school, they must not care about their jobs or their students. We work so hard to give students a positive shoulder to lean on, even when everything remains challenging in our own lives. But to ask teachers to return to in-person teaching in a way that lacks foresight and proper planning is reckless. I urge the board to reconsider reopening Odyssey, quote, aggressively, as they stated at the last board meeting. There should be nothing aggressive about this plan. I would ask that a concerned member of the board make a proposal that the original plan and timetable presented at the previous board meeting be followed by Odyssey staff in order to give admin, facilities, and teachers time to handle this task in a way that is more cautious and expedient. And I have one other public comment. Just one other person requested time to make a public comment, Katie Manley.
Can you hear me? Okay, there we go. I just wanted to briefly speak. I spoke in the reopening committee meeting also today. I do believe that the board is taking health and wellness as the number one guidance for this reopening plan. There were concerns that it got accelerated because originally staff were told that they were going to be remote for marking for the whole first semester. So there was a lot of concern with that. And I personally am returning on Monday. My request is that the board just continues to be very clear in their communications with clear dates, and whether that's administration, I'm not sure. There's been a lot of miscommunications lately, and it really needs to be clear of who is returning, when, what date, and how, because there are parents asking when their students are returning, and some are returning Monday and they don't know yet. So we just really need to be clear with that. A lot of the staff members are concerned, and I just think as long as the board continues to to follow the health and wellness guidelines and really focuses on safety, it's really hard because people are comparing us to other schools, and we cannot do that. Odyssey is unique. We are different. We are not a huge district. We do not have the budget for some of the things that districts are doing. Our buildings are not equipped to handle this. The school is moving as quickly as they can. The board is, you know, asking for decisions, and they are using health and wellness guidelines throughout the entire thing. I've been sitting on the committee for months and months. I do believe it's important. I know some of the staff are frustrated, but I assure you that it's the number one concern, is that we do it safely. So I just want to make sure that the board, Elias, you mentioned, is sending out a communication, just continuing to communicate what was said, because not everybody will go back and look at the recording of the meeting or check the board bites. Just a clear, you know, maybe a timeline, something that's summarized so everyone knows where we stand after this meeting tonight, what was approved, and how we move forward so that we can all plan accordingly. I just think that's going to be really, really important right now. And just for everybody to make sure that they feel comfortable and safe, and that is the number one concern. And that's all I just really wanted to say. But again, thank you to the committee, the work that you put in, the hours of just doing this and revamping the plans and changing it and collecting data is just astounding. You guys did a wonderful job. So I just really want to say thanks to the committee.
Thanks, Katie. I think that's it, but I did want to just circle back to a few things. So we are planning on having a town hall where we can have a good question and answer session with the admin and folks over the next, probably sometime in the next 2 weeks or maybe sooner, to kind of get where we can just have a forum where we can have a lot of questions answered by both parents and staff and others. And so we'll work with Ricardo and the admin team to set up a town hall or multiple town halls over the next few weeks as needed to do that. But I did want to circle back quickly to just clarify a couple of questions. I know that Bull had asked a question about teachers that were either out of the country or out of the classroom and how that would be managed with respect to their students. Can you address that, Ricardo, quickly, or Jackie, how that would work and what the process would be for being able to work with teachers that can't make it into school for whatever reason, whether they can continue virtually or otherwise?
Elias, that is part of the accommodation discussion and that we had at the beginning of the meeting and the presentation. And as we said, each accommodation need is going to be different. Yes, we do have some staff that is out of the country, and we're working very hard to bring them back into the country. Temporarily, they will need an accommodation and supports locally to be able to, even if we bring their students back, what that accommodation might look like. That is part of the work that we're doing with the deans and with HR. And that applies to all the staff that is asking for accommodations, you know, and that analysis is happening on a case-by-case basis, and it's going to be driven by the kind of accommodation that they need or are requesting. Don't have much more detail right now, and of course we cannot get into the specific details of the individual requests.
I will say as well, Ricardo, I think, and Jackie or Juliana, you could confirm, but if there's a situation where there's an accommodation of some sort taking place with a teacher, that the parents of the children that teacher teaches would be notified to understand that situation.
That's correct, Jeff. So if we, it will also be in our survey, if your child will be returning to in-person learning or if they will stay virtual. There's also a question on that survey. If for whatever reason, one of your teachers or your primary teacher will not be in the building, will your child be returning? And if that is the case, all members of that class will be notified by their building level dean.
Okay, thanks. And I did want to provide a little more color to Patty's question on the status of headmaster. I know that's been an ongoing thing, and we have sent out information status updates on that. But for those that aren't aware, we did have quite a number of stakeholders last week join us, but we are down to two candidates And those are being reviewed this week for final assessment by the search committee, who will then forward recommendations to the board of directors. The board of directors will then review those and should have a decision. Now, that could take anywhere from, I'm guessing, two to three weeks, but we expect that we should have a decision by the end of this month on that. So we are very close. We're very close on the head of school, and we should be having a decision sometime soon. Okay. So that's also, I did want to just move forward and just validate the administration's recommendations, which is to move forward based on their phase two opening, which is going to half days. Is that correct? Can you guys provide language for your recommendation, Ricardo? I just want to make sure we're clear on what you're looking for approval on.
That we proceed with the phase one and currently proposed phase two reopening for November 9th, December 7th, and phase two reopening subject to a validation of the health metrics that have been proposed.
And phase three, I'm guessing, as well, too. Is that correct?
Well, when you're saying phase three, we're bringing the original phase three into, you know.
I got phase it. It's starting at the same timeline as phase two.
Exactly.
Now, the only one clarification that I had on the phase two was the time scheduling of the, at least the K to two students. Are you recommending half day in class and then optional virtual cafe or being dismissed at the middle of the day? Is that the recommendation for the younger students? I just want to be clear on that.
Yes, the recommendation is option one versus the dual mode for the K-5. And please correct me, Juliana or Jackie.
No, you're correct, Ricardo.
And that's both for the lower and intermediate schools, 8:15 to basically noontime in class.
Yes, K through five.
K to five, okay. And middle school is full day.
Correct.
Okay.
And just to be clear, it is a 10-minute time difference between the lower school and the intermediate school, just in terms of drop-offs.
Correct. That's fine. And I think we're okay with that. Can we have a motion for that, just to validate that schedule?
So I'll move to approve the schedule as proposed by administration with half days for K through five, okay, beginning in phase two.
We have a second.
I think, do we need to add that it's contingent upon the health metrics, Aaron?
That's sure, part of the recommendations, but that's fine.
Yeah, so contingent on health and wellness per the recommendation. Good call, Marian.
And we are going to stick with the enhanced metrics, not the state metrics.
Yeah, the metrics are two of the four criteria that would be downward trending. But the state metrics are the absolute metrics, basically, that provides the baseline for reopening.
Aaron, I'll second your motion.
Do we have any discussion on that, on the motion? All right, we'll call for vote. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Do we have any opposed? Okay, it passes unanimously. Thank you. I don't believe, we don't have any other, do we have any, I just want to check with you, Ricardo, if we had any public good or any quick comments from the administration or for good of the school?
No, not at this time, Elias.
All right, thank you. So at this point in time, we're done with. So someone asked me if anybody was abstaining on that vote. I didn't call for an abstention vote, but is anybody abstaining from that last vote? I don't believe so. Okay. So that's clear. We do need to go into executive session for a few minutes just to discuss a few points. And so we're done with the public session. So I want to thank everybody for joining us and for all their questions. We're going to capture all the questions, and we did mention pulling those together, and those that we couldn't address, we'll create frequently asked questions document on the website. We'll send that out again with messages from the school. So Ricardo, if you can take point on putting together the frequently asked questions and response document that we can put on the website that folks can go to, and we'll work to schedule a town hall or multiple town halls over the next few weeks as needed to have all parents and staff ask any questions that they may need as we move towards looking at reopening. Okay, so we have a motion to go into executive session.
I move we go into executive session.
Okay.
Second, Mrs. Darren.
Second, okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Ricardo, are you going to be able to work all the questions, particularly with personnel and logistics in executive session? Do we need to bring somebody else in there? Did we lose Ricardo?
I do believe Ricardo has access to a spreadsheet that was worked on by all the deans. So I believe that's what he would be sharing. I just don't know where he is.
All right. If we need anybody else, we'll call on them. But can you, let me see. I guess I'll create. I'll start assigning people to executive session.
We'll go for Elias, I could join initially too if needed as well.
Okay. Ken, you're on here twice. Are you on a phone and a Zoom computer?
Yeah, just pick one.
Okay.
Preferably the one with my picture.
I'll put you on both. Okay, I think I have everybody in there.
Wow.
You're muted, Elias. I'm muted. I said we're back in public session. It's 9:16. Anybody have any last comments before we adjourn?
Just no. Get our town halls scheduled and so we can listen to our people.
Will do. Okay. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. We are officially adjourned. 9:16. Thank you, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for hanging out.